That is Clock Strikes 10. That is Cheap Trick from their 1977 album, In Color. I'm Rocker, here with you tonight, along with Sam Davis. You are listening to Max Inc. Radio on the Civic Media Radio Network. Sam, you know, Cheap Trick, they were a local band in a way. They were from Rockford, and back in the 70s and 80s, and even today, there is a connection between the music scenes of Milwaukee, Madison, and Rockford, and it's where Cheap Trick got their start. And there's a new book coming out on September 3rd called American Standard, Cheap Trick, From the Bars to the Budokan and Beyond. And right now we have author Ross Warner on the phone with us from New York. Ross, welcome to Max Inc. Radio.
How you guys doing?
Awesome, awesome. How's New York out there right now?
It's good. It's Labor Day weekend. It's Long Island. It's actually nice weather. So, it's great. Don't have to be at work. And it's Saturday.
Not too humid?
No, actually, it's not. I mean, it's starting to get a little bit cool. But, like everybody else, in the beginning of the summer, it was pretty bad.
So, Ross, you are a professional writer, and you specialize in music. Tell us a little about yourself, and what's your backstory? How did you become an author?
I don't know that I'm a professional. I mean, I have written for a long time. I do actually also teach full-time social studies for 28 years now. But that's slightly by choice because I wrote a book called Drunk on Sunday, which is a fictionalized account of growing up in the suburbs, being an obsessive San Diego, now Los Angeles Chargers fan, going to 138 Dead shows, and kind of fighting responsibility every step of the way. And I guess movies, music, television, I've always obviously loved, so I've always tried to write about it. And even in the mid-90s when I started writing, I mean, it was before even blogging existed, I used to write like a newsletter for the Chargers. Now, of course, there's a blog or a podcast for everything. Everybody's got, a microphone and a stack of very impressive books or albums behind them to show off. But and that's really kind of my backstory, just writing in general. It's always been a passion of mine. And although this is obviously a biography, so it's slightly different, it required a lot more research. I've always enjoyed, obviously, expressing myself that way through writing.
Well, now tell us about your new book about Cheap Trick. What does your book focus on? Early Cheap Trick history?
Sure. Yeah. Brian Cramp, who I think you guys all spoke to, did a book that I wasn't even aware of when I started, called This Band Has No Past, which I'm glad actually looking back that his came out, because I couldn't do what Brian does and I wouldn't even have tried, which that obviously was a very forensic, almost a podcast like look at all the early permutations of the band. Obviously, yes, the roots, in Rockford, but as I heard you mention, they're as much a Wisconsin band as they are an Illinois band. And my book, I think, really focuses on more what everybody kind of remembers about Cheap Trick, which is, Budokan, Dream Police, kind of the improbability of that story happening. And then really a lot of the misconceptions that, certainly the band, went along with for a while, not just the fake bio, but about Budokan, about obviously being, Jack Douglas, kind of more perpetuated it, but the idea of being just discovered at the Sunset Bowl as if they were just kind of playing and he, happened to be there, which wasn't the case. And then, of course, the album, everybody has that image of them, in that very moment. But obviously, the album itself, really worked for and against them, because when it came out, obviously, it wasn't originally intended to be, domestic release. It wasn't import. I did talk to Marty Scott of Gem Records, which was a huge importer at the time that had a huge role in that. It's part of the story that I don't think ever really gets talked about. And, by the time, Budokan finally hit, they were really forced to sort of kind of stand in motion and not, their set list couldn't change. And obviously Dream Police had already been, for the most part recorded. So they spent the better part of, years sort of supporting an album that they never really intended, to be the thing. And, certainly by the time they broke in 1979, and then the album comes out in September, I think it definitely, like I said, worked for and against them. And, obviously they've had several more rises and falls, since then. And originally I'd attempted to do an entire band biography, you know, for all of the years, but, you know, they're approaching their 50th year this year, three of the four, but, the publisher really wanted me to, you know, focus on a certain number of pages. So that's when I kind of decided to really get into the, you know, the era, like I said, that everybody really knows them from, you know, where some people, they are literally that band frozen in time, you know, on that stage, screaming Japanese girls, you know, stage patter, which is iconic as the performances. Obviously, there's a generation of people that only know, you know, this is the first song off our new album because it's on the Beastie Boys' Check Your Head.
I mean, yeah, right. That,
but.
Well, you know, can you tell us about the unique relationship that Cheap Trick has had with the Tri-City music scenes of Rockford, Milwaukee, and Madison? You mentioned Sunset Bowl. Is that the one in Waukesha?
Yeah, yeah, that is. I mean, they are, you know, they're as Midwestern as they come. And I think, you know, in reality, you know, they are four, you know, including Bun, they are four Swedish guys, you know, from Rockford. They obviously, and there is, you know, that's seemingly about as ordinary as it can be. And then, of course, the, you know, the biography of this band, you know, has no past that Eric von Lustbader, you know, was asked to craft for them that made it seem much more exotic. Like, just like Budokan itself kind of worked for and against them, because for a long time, you know, they had to answer questions about it, and it became not just a talking point, but something that kind of dogged them. And more, I mean, than, you know, even though I think I mentioned, I mean, Kiss obviously paints their faces, but in many ways, especially Rick, I mean, I know Bun has said that, you know, Rick Nielsen has been, you know, been in character since, you know, basically 1975. He's always Rick Nielsen. I know he just, you know, basically was involved with the opening of the Hard Rock in Rockford.
Yeah.
But I mean, they obviously came not only out of the Sunset Bowl, which, like I said, Brian certainly talks about, I think he grew up in Waukesha, but, you know, that show itself, you know, they had Jack Douglas come in. Kay Adamanti, I know you had mentioned, it was very nice to show me. I mean, I saw, like, the letters, you know, and the call logs to Jack Douglas. I mean, it was a much more deliberate thing to have Jack come here than there. And then, really, I mean, with the Midwest, something that I'm sort of aware of is just the craziness of all of those just bars that they played in, you know, everything, you know, so 70s, just something like the wet t-shirt contests, the promotions, you know, these small places where, you know, they were out there, and obviously their look, the one that everybody knows them for, you know, took a little bit to kind of solidify. So there were different permutations of that. But I mean, they really were, you know, they were out there every night, really, you know, working their ass off to be successful. And I think that's another thing of the Cheap Trick image, you know, again, personified by Rick, kind of, you know, the goofiness and not really trying, but they were super trying. They very much cared about being successful. And I guess the story about them being, you know, discovered by happenstance by Jack in a bowling alley kind of detracts from that. You know, it makes for a great story. I do put in the book, you know, it's like the old, you know, John Ford, Western Liberty Valance, you know, print the legend. But it also detracts from the fact they really were deserving of it. And I think when they broke, it really appeared to a lot of people like they were like a fluke, you know, that they were kind of a gimmick, that, you know, that the term Cheap Trick, you know, they thought, well, that's actually what they are. They're just trying to kind of, they're kind of deceive us. And the reality was that, you know, there was, the real story was much more, I guess, deliberate and, you know, much more deserving, but I guess it wasn't nearly as fascinating as them kind of just, you know, appearing. But they are, you know, they are as Midwestern as they come. I mean, they, like I said, and, you know, obviously I live in New York, but I know, you know, where Rockford is on the border. I mean, their offices were centered in Madison. You know, Kat Adamanti, you know, was, obviously in Madison. You know, they played, you know, as many places in Wisconsin as they did in Illinois. So, you know, while they're now, you know, obviously the thing that's synonymous with Rockford, they certainly would just as easily, you know, could be the Wisconsin band. And then I think that also at the time, I know Bunnett said it, that they were accused of kind of not claiming Rockford, you know, but Rockford obviously wasn't, you know, the greatest place to a lot of people. So that may have also been something that, you know, worked for and against them.
Well, I'll tell you, Rockford has always produced many bands that we actually play right here on Max Inc. Radio. They've always been kind of a hotbed of local music down there to me. So, you know, Rockford, Madison, Milwaukee, that's a great area.
Yeah, I mean, there was obviously an entire culture of, you know, bands, like, you know, off-Broadway and you know, they, I mean, right, absolutely. I mean, it was funny, like I said, you know, I mentioned, you know, obviously being a Deadhead song, as well as a Cheap Trick fan, that, you know, I kind of think of all those bars very much kind of like, you know, the ballrooms of the '60s in San Francisco, you know, to take, replace, you know, acid, you know, and electric Kool-Aid with, you know, just like, you know, the 5 cent beers and, just kind of the, you know, the raucous rock bands of the Midwest. But yeah, they were the ones that made it, you know, it's kind of the same way that, you know, Springsteen was the one that made it out of Jersey. But yeah, there is definitely an entire kind of scene that, you know, exists there.
Where can we find your new book, American Standard, Cheap Trick, From the Bars to the Budokan and Beyond?
You can find it actually everywhere. It'll be, it'll be in bookstores. It'll be on, it's on Amazon. It's on every retailer. It will be anywhere where books are sold.
That's awesome. So paperback or hardback?
Yeah, it comes out on Tuesday, which ironically, is when Pearl Jam will be at Madison Square Garden. And, I'm actually going to go to the show, but yeah, Mike McCready wrote the foreword, which I would love to tell you is because, you know, I have a close relationship with Mike McCready or members of Pearl Jam, but really was because, you know, much like Jeff Amen, who wrote the foreword to Brian's book, or, you know, Billy Joe Armstrong, or there's so many people that, you know, love Cheap Trick. But I mean, Mike McCready is a Cheap Trick super fan. So that, I think, was really obviously the impetus for him to do his contribution.
Well, that's awesome. Well, you've done Grateful Dead, now Cheap Trick. What's next for Ross Warner? Ruby Star?
You know, I don't know. Like I said, I did enough research for certainly a second Cheap Trick book. I mean, it's like the progressive ads of Dr. Rick, where, you know, he tells people that don't want to become their parents, you don't have to print the internet. I definitely printed the internet. I have folders and folders of all sorts of material. So, I mean, I certainly could do a second book on Cheap Trick, and depending on how this, you know, is received. I know, you know, they're obviously, they do have a fanatic fan base, but I guess obviously it really depends on whether the, you know, the average fan, you know, picks it up. Or I may consider doing a follow up to my first book, Drunk on Sunday, which, like I said, is fictionalized, but it is pretty much me. And do a sequel to that, which would be Hungover on Monday, which would be more about having, you know, a second child and kind of adjusting to, yes, it was actually, because you guys are in Wisconsin, it's actually a takeoff on Ray Nitschke's book, Mean on Sunday. That's where I got the idea for the title.
Oh, wow. Go Pack.
So there would be possibly a Hungover on Monday at some point. So, we'll see. I mean, obviously, with the Dead, there's so many great writers that have covered that. I mean, my thinking at the time about Cheap Trick was they were a band that, you know, this was before Brian's book, and I don't even remember if I knew about Doug Broad's. They seem just a little weird. So Robert Lawson's book, Still Competition, and then the now out-of-print book, Reputation is a Fragile Thing, were the only two that had been written. So that's where I thought, oh, well, maybe this band, you know, deserves like a biography. I was just getting into it, obviously realizing how much there was a difference between the perception of them versus the reality. And again, I mean, a lot of the stuff that they continue to say, which I certainly get into in the book, especially about Budokan and about, you know, I want you to want me being played at the very last second, kind of in a lark. I mean, that blatantly isn't true. They played it the show before in the London Roundhouse, and, you know, they had intended to play it. I mean, Kid Adamany, you know, showed me, you know, the letter they wrote to the promoter that I talk about in the book that, you know, talks about, you know, these are the songs we're going to play. So I get why the story, you know, is needed, because it was such a random thing for them, especially, you know, when the studio version they did with Tom Werman was so kind of docile by comparison. But of course, in another weird Cheap Trick, you know, irony, you know, if there hadn't been that cheesy, you know, crying on the studio album, the Japanese girls wouldn't have picked it up and sang it back to them. And, you know, for a lot of people, that is still what Cheap Trick, you know, conjures up.
Well, Ross, thank you so much for coming on MagSafe Radio to tell us all about your new book. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. It's been...
Go ahead.
No, say that's been, you know, I've been very enjoyable on my end too. The quote Office Space, you know, all the pleasures on the side of the table.
All right, thanks, Ross. Well, let's get back to 1979 from Cheap Trick's hit album Dream Police. This is The House Is Rockin'. This is MagSync Radio. We are local music.